Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
Hello, welcome to Japan Needs. I'm your host, Akiko Tema, a food writer and the director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deeper understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcasting live from Brooklyn, New York. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every deli and supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi ramen izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is so mystery for many people, and I try to demystify it in this program with my cool guests. My guest today is Ken Suzuki, the founder of Suzuki Farm in Delaware, which opened in 1983. In the last 39 years, Ken has devoted himself to introducing native Japanese vegetables and fruits to America. He and his team grow a variety of Japanese produce in their 28-acre land and harvest more than 30 kinds of crops throughout the year. I've been hearing about Suzuki Farm through Japanese and non-Japanese chefs who look for the uniquely delicate flavors of Japanese vegetables. So today we'll discuss why Japanese-born Ken Suzuki decided to farm in the U.S., what kinds of Japanese crops he grows, how unique and special they are, and how you can use them in your kitchen, and much, much more. But before we start, Japan Needs is available on the Heritage Radio Network website, as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. So please go to iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify, whichever you listen to, and subscribe to Japan Needs. And please write a review. We really appreciate your feedback. Now, let's start a conversation with Ken Suzuki. Hello, Ken. Welcome to the show.
Hi, yes. First of all, I would like to express my deep appreciation or arigato to all my customers. It's a quite long time. I was supported from many customers.
Yeah, I'm sure. There are so many customers you can even count. So, okay, so first of all, to get to know you, where are you from and what did you eat when you grew up?
I was born and grew up in Yamagori, Aichi Prefecture, Japan. Since Japan was not enough rich and my house was not also so rich, I had never eaten at a lot of good food. I mostly ate rice, sometimes vegetables, and fishes. As my father worked at the fish shop, my family could eat fish, which was left over at shop. Fish was relatively cheaper at that time.
Right. Sounds like a very healthy childhood. So when and why did you come to America?
I came here to the United States in 1974 as a chicken sexer. Have you heard of what job is?
No, I haven't. What is chicken sexer?
Chicken sexer is to observe a chick's genital or psyche and instantly judge male or female to supply chicken growers. Since the chicks is just born and very small, it is very difficult to make a judgment. It is important to have a concentration and good eyesight, not only knowledge. At that time, Japan Chicken Sexer Associate sent many young people in the world. I was one of them. And I learned technique at the school at association run. I worked in the Colombia for a few years because going to the United States in 1970.
Wow. Sounds like a very special skill you had. So, and I heard that you worked for Purdue Food Company, which is a large manufacturer of chicken products. So were you invited by Purdue to work in the U.S. or you wanted to come to the U.S. for another reason?
When I came to the state, I worked in Iowa State at first. However, the local company gave us only half a year. It's freezing cold area in the winter, so chicken grower couldn't raise a half year. As my wife and I couldn't make money, we requested the association to be moved to any other area. Then I started working at Purdue in Maryland in 1975.
I see.
We started working at Purdue from August. We were too busy to sleep. The company was very growing at that time, so we could have a lot of the work. We often overworked. As soon as we arrived home, we fell asleep immediately.
Wow.
Luckily, we could make money next a few years. Then we built a house in South Bay, Maryland.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. It's an American dream to come true.
But the good day didn't last long. In the end of 1982, the job hour was quickly reduced.
So what happened in 1982?
It was because one new way of judgment was developed. Only checking the chick's wing, it can be found female or male. By the new way, it can be done 5,000 chicks a hour. On the other hand, by the traditional way, it can be done only 1,200 chicks, even the best worker like my wife. For chicken growers, they could reduce sex judgment cost dramatically, but chicken sexer, we lost a chance to make money like we used to do.
Oh, that's too bad.
As we already had a daughter and a son at that time, we somehow had to make a living. This is why I started to grow vegetables here in the USA. My first motivation was to produce food for my family. But as I started to harvest too much to consume only in my family, I had a drive to sell them to big city near here. Then I found some people also think they wanted Japanese fresh vegetables like we felt for a long time. It used to be sold less vegetables in grocery. There were only kales, tomato, beans, onions, and potatoes. Local people had no dietary habit to eat many fresh vegetables, much to eat fresh vegetables at that time.
Wow, it's amazing you successfully grow so much vegetables. And it was really a good time for American consumers to get more appetite for something very foreign, like Japanese vegetables too. So that's great. So, and you opened the Suki Farm 39 years ago in 1983 in Delmar, Delaware. Why did you open a farm there?
Currently, farm is in Delaware, as you said, but to tell the exactly, I opened my farm in Maryland at the first time. I just borrowed a piece of small land, a corner of one grower's big land. Their land was huge. Then my new business go along with little by little. The first 10 years, I did everything by myself. In other words, my business was small. I needed to do it by myself. It was a tough time, especially for watering. I didn't have well and irrigation system, so I needed to go back my house to get water. Then I brought the water tank to my rental farm. I so frequently went back and forth in summer. I needed watering at 11 p.m., then went back to farm at 4 a.m.
Wow. Well, maybe it's better than going to the gym. That's why you look still very fit. okay, so how did you deliver your vegetables at that time then?
Of course, I drove my van by myself. There were only many Japanese in New York City. So there were a huge Japanese grocery store there. I brought my vegetables to them every Saturdays. As farming has no holiday, I needed to drive after physical work at Friday midnight. My wife and my children already come with me to check for me not to sleep during driving. One customer told me, Saturday is long, wolf, and cub. I was really supported by my family. Thank you very much.
Right. Wow, that is amazing. Right. Okay. So we'll take a quick break here. And when we come back, we'll discuss what is special about Japanese vegetables, what kinds of Japanese vegetables can grow, and how you can use them. So please stay with us.
Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. The Hearst family has been raising cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of California's Central Coast for over 150 years. Piedra Blanca Rancho in San Simeon is the original Hearst Ranch, founded by George Hearst in 1865. George's son was the famous publisher William Randolph Hearst. In addition to being known for building the iconic Hearst Castle, William was, like his father before him, an avid rancher. In his words, I would rather spend a month at the ranch than any place in the world. Thanks to one of the largest land conservation easements in California history, a joint effort with the California Rangeland Trust, the American Land Conservancy, and the state of California, the working landscape at Hearst Ranch will be preserved forever. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Japan Eats. I'm your host, Akiko Tema, and my guest today is Ken Suzuki, the founder of the Suzuki Farm in Delaware, which opened in 1983. In the last 39 years, Ken has devoted himself to introducing native Japanese vegetables and fruits to America. So let's talk about Japanese vegetables. So your farm specializes in Japanese vegetables and grows over 30 types of crops. So what is unique and special about Japanese vegetables?
Yes, I have more than 30 types of vegetables. Even me, I might not tell you everything currently at one time. As to what is Japanese vegetables, I don't know the accurate definition, but idea to say it is to pursue its deliciousness. As a variety issue, some of giant seed company went out of Japan. Then they also look for more high productivity and or disease resistance. But I still believe Japanese seed breeder basically pursue delicious variety. Also, Japanese grower traditionally used organic materials. I believe this pulled out its deliciousness. In addition, Japanese chef and housewives were very keen to create super delicious cuisine, so grower tried to catch up their expectation. I think it contributes Japanese vegetables progress too.
I agree. And so what do you think of the current status of Japanese vegetables market in Japan?
I don't know current vegetables situation because I haven't lived in Japan for ages. But I just worry about unstable vegetables market. Sometimes very expensive and often dumping price. If I was under such a situation, it's hard to keep motivation to grow delicious crops.
So, and then your vegetables are known for being naturally grown and pesticide-free. So what is your philosophy of growing vegetables at your farm?
It is hard to score my farming by one word, but I could say it is a natural growing. I believe that the best taste of vegetables can be abstracted from the seeds. Inherent power under a appropriate environment and an appropriate agriculture method. For vegetables to grow healthy, soil is essential. I put compost into my farm every year before planting. And this organic matter grow microorganisms and earthworms in the ground. The decomposed organic matter become a nutrient for the planting vegetables. This flow is a key for my farming. I have practiced making delicious vegetables by reducing the use of synthetic fertilizers and allowing vegetables to grow naturally. I'm sorry to say that I have not committed to my vegetables as pesticide-free. This is because the seeds from Japan already be treated with a fungicide for quarantine. For the growing period, when I need spray, I will use organic certificated pesticide at my host choice. Organic chemicals are difficult to spray to be effective, but this is my policy. I don't use herbicide and plant growth promoter in my farm. I often receive complaint from my people. Why you don't use herbicide even outside of farm? It's very tough to remove grasses by hands, and so on. But I'm proudly to say I will not use herbicide. As I said, my first motivation was to eat them with my family. I don't like to use chemicals, and I wanted my family to eat delicious vegetables, not like conventional one to be sold for a long time. This is the reason I will keep on practicing my natural growing.
Right. It makes sense that for the last 39 years, chefs rave about your vegetables. So, yeah, it comes all about from your natural growing philosophy. So that's amazing. So, so seasonality, or shun in Japanese, is at the core of Japanese cuisine. So what kind of Japanese vegetables are the best for each season at your farm?
Yes, you are right. I also believe the seasonality is a key for Japanese vegetables and cuisine. It's not easy to pick up only my vegetables each season. Let's say over green shiso in spring, kiwi, cucumber in summer, kabocha squash in autumn, daikon radish in winter. I have more delicious vegetables not only said once.
Right. Well, for example, whenever I go to Japan, I just run to a Japanese grocery shop to eat cucumber in the summertime. It's very different. So, yeah. So, and then your farm is located at Delmar, in the state of Delaware. So is the climate of Delaware suitable for growing Japanese vegetables?
Yes, I believe this area is very suitable to grow Japanese vegetables. Geographically, we are located in Delmarva Peninsula and close to ocean. And at two latitudes, our area is as same as Miyagi Prefecture in Japan. Climate-wise, it is categorized to temperate, humid climate. I believe it's close to Tohoku or northern Kanto area in Japan. And after all, we have four seasons and various similar aspects to Japan. I can say our place is quite good area for vegetables cultivation.
Interesting. So they know that why you can have four seasons. So yeah, Miyagi Prefecture is pretty north, up north of Japan. So that really makes sense. Okay. And I'd like to ask you more specifically about some of the Japanese vegetables that you grow so that the listeners can get the idea of what Japanese vegetables are. So I saw your website, which is amazing, and what is available right now in early spring. So you have plenty of goodies right now, right?
Yes. Well, first, I've restarted harvesting leaves, such as komatsuna, shungiku, and mizuna. All of them are very popular for Japanese people in the East areas. And some local American people also order as periodically. We can supply our leaves in a day or so. Therefore, they are very fresh.
Right. Yeah, so the komatsuna, shungeku, mizuna, those are very unique Japanese herbs, and it changes the whole richness of the flavor of a dish once you have it. So, yeah, that's fascinating that it's available in the States. So, and I have some examples of typical vegetables that you can find as Japanese vegetable. So first of all, what is Tokyo scallion or Tokyo negi in Japanese? What is the difference between regular scallions that you can find in the States?
Well, Tokyo negi is so called naga negi or nebuka negi in Japan. We started planting from January and harvest from autumn to winter. It takes 10 months or a year to grow. The feather is not easy to eat white person portion. Not only green leaves add to the taste. You can enjoy its bitterness and umami together. It is essential for Japanese cuisine. To tell the truth, our Tokyo negi this season had a big winter storm damage in January. It was too cold to keep on growing. I've never experienced such damage last several years. So my Tokyo negi has less green leaves as of now. Regular scallion in groceries looks like a Japanese green onion, but it's a kind big different from Tokyo negi. They are grown quickly in warmers area. The taste has only bitterness and limited umami.
Right. Okay. The Tokyo scallions are, to me, it's very essential and it's very delicate. And yeah, like a sweetness and umami, those elements are packed in one place. And yeah, it's a unique. It looks like thinner leek. And vegetables, but it's unique. So you have to taste that. And then the texture, it's kind of, if you cook long, it melts in your mouth too. So that's another charm of it. Okay. So what is mitsuba? Which is very versatile. It's a precious vegetable. It's a unique Japanese vegetable. What does it taste like and how do you use it?
Mitsuba has a refreshing green color and a unique scent. It is indispensable for Japanese cuisine during winter and early spring. I think it is most used for New Year's or Ozoni. In addition to the color of the dishes, there are various ways to eat, such as salad and kakiage, which is one style of tempura.
Right. Yeah, mitsuba is, some people say it's similar to celery or Italian parsley or somewhere in between. But to me, it's really unique. And then I like putting them in the hot pot. And it's just a fragrance that, like you said, it smells very, very wonderful. So, by the way, what is shiso? And also, what are hanaho and hojiso?
Shiso is the most typically Japanese herb. Especially green shiso is called oba too. It is used to so many various ways of Japanese cuisine, such as sushi. It has not only its highly aroma, but also high nutrient. According to Japanese TV programs, one of function in anti-aging. It is maybe why I can still walk 6 days a week. Red shiso is now getting popular here. Traditionally, we used red shiso for add to umeboshi and make it red color. But recently, it mostly used for juice. It's healthy and refreshing juice, popular among young ladies. Hoiso is a bird of shiso, and hanaho is a flower. Both items are also used for cuisine. It looks Japanese doesn't like to waste any part of plant.
Right. We don't waste anything. That is for sure. So for visually, our listeners may have seen tiny garnish of pink flowers on the stem on top of sashimi at the Japanese restaurant. And so that's the hanaho jiso. And the hojiso, hanaho jiso. These are really rare to find. But, if you go to a Japanese restaurant, you eat the sashimi, usually shiso leaves are underneath the sashimi and sometimes with shredded daikon. And if you put them together and eat it with wasabi, it's sublime. And you should never leave it on your plate because it's something I often see it's not eaten. So it's a treasure. Anyway, so your goal is to deliver the freshest and most delicious vegetables possible to your customers. So what is the biggest challenge for you to achieve your goal?
Well, agricultural aspect, I challenge to produce bokashi fertilizer by myself.
So what is bokashi fertilizer?
It's totally organic mallas mixed with rice bran, fish meal, and so on. It's a traditional Japanese agriculture fertilizer. And this is really good for plants to absorb nutrients naturally. Its general artificial fertilizer make plants absorb nutrients so quickly. This causes plants unhealthy. Bokashi fertilizer is one of wisdom our ancestor created. Sad to say, but I heard not many growers used in Japan now. Currently, I am still learning how to produce it here. I have not succeeded. It as of now. This challenge is not only for soil enrichment, but for vegetables deliciousness. This is my biggest challenge this season.
Right. Interesting. So, nutrients can be absorbed too much too soon, and that all really causes all those imbalances within the plant, and also it's not as good to the soil as compared to natural fertilizer. So, okay. And do you have any other challenges?
I would like to start a CSA program. It stands for community-supported agricultures. Now many American families use them and support for local farms. The original concept comes from Japan in 1960s. It went to Europe, then it spread in the state. I don't know how to create this program as of now, but it is time to challenge the program this season.
Right. Well, CSA, I think, is really effective to support small farms. And I used to be a member, and I had to stop just because the pickup date of the week didn't work for me anymore. But I'm hoping to resume my membership again. So, yeah, it's a great idea. And then it's win-win because consumers get the freshest, most amazing vegetables regularly just by paying ahead of time. Beginning of the season. So, yeah, I hope you will make it happen very, very soon. So, who are your customers?
Well, wholesaler and home cookers. I started business with a wholesaler at first, mostly grocery store and supermarket. And we have some restaurant users. They are still my biggest customers. And several years ago, one student who used to study college in the state helped me to build up website. Then I could start business with an individual person, so-called e-commerce. Last 2 years, many home cookers order my vegetables through the website under COVID restriction.
Right. Well, I'm one of those who perused your amazing website. And yeah, so I got your vegetables. It's so fresh and it's just different. And I had, first time in a long time, I had a very, very good Japanese daikon. And there was a special Kyoto species carrots. So yeah, I'm very grateful that you have that, all the wonderful vegetables to consumers directly too. So, okay, so your customers include many top chefs. So could you give us some examples of how they use Japanese vegetables?
Yes, however, I cannot say everyone. As one good example, Sushi Taro in Washington, D.C. periodically orders our vegetables. Not only top chef, one chain ramen restaurants are now trying to use our Tokyo Negi for tapping on ramen. I would like to introduce my vegetables to all chefs who looks for fresh and delicious vegetables.
Right. And I have to add, it's not just fresh and delicious, it's unique. And there are many discoveries. Even I grew up eating some of those Japanese vegetables. I forgot when I went to American supermarkets. So many, many discoveries and that often rescues my cooking as well. So yeah. Good luck. And so you sell Japanese vegetable seedlings on your website too. So what kind of seedlings would you recommend to beginner home vegetable growers like me?
I recommended OVA, green shiso at first. You can grow the seedling in-house with room temperature and adequate water. OVA grows very well. You may harvest them until September.
Right. Yeah, so OVA shiso that we mentioned. And you can have shiso flowers and even shiso fruits after the season too. So growing your own OVA or shiso is such a pleasure throughout the season. And they grow so well. I tried that on my fire escape in New York City apartment. So what else?
If you have a garden, why don't you try curry cucumber, nasu eggplant, manganji pepper? One of my customers told me she harvested a lot of nasu fruits last year, more than her family consumption. Manganji pepper is non-hot pepper. Shishito is well known, but it is one hot fruit out of 10. Manganji is good for everyone, especially for families with children and elders. We will start the seedling sales from mid-April until end of May.
Okay, so coming up on sales season. And I have to say, nasu is really easy to grow, but the nasu eggplants are very different from American or European equivalent because it's so thinner, shinier, and smaller, and more delicate, but intense. So yeah, I highly recommend that you try growing it. Okay, and then I heard that you recently transferred the ownership of your farm to a company called Foods Style USA, although you and your farm team remain active in managing the farm. So why did you decide to transfer the ownership of your farm?
because it was a good time to succeed my farming to next generation. As my daughter and my son have their job, I needed to look for others. And most of my customers are Japanese, so I needed someone to take care of them, knowing Japanese way to feel. One of my customers introduced me with Mr. Yoneda, president of Foodstyle USA. I decided to take my business to him last February. He requested me to stay at farm and to keep on working with his people. It is a good chance for me to teach my farming to them. It has passed just 1 year.
Right. I understand. You've been working on the farm almost 40 years, so I respect your hard work and it's time. But I think you found a good partner because Foodstyle USA, Santoka, that's a ramen chain stores, and they seem to understand very well the value of healthy and delicious Japanese vegetables. So, yeah. Well, good luck and congratulations. So what are your plans and dreams?
Oh, this is my secret. I can't say it today. Please leave it only in my heart.
Okay. All right. So maybe I'll ask you in, 5 years. Okay. So where can we find your updates online and on social media?
Yes, we have Facebook and then Instagrams. Please search by Suzuki Farm USA, then you may easily find our page.
Okay, great. All right, so thank you so much for joining us today, Ken.
Thank you so much.
All right, so listeners, I really highly, highly recommend that you try Japanese vegetables through Suzuki Farm website, and you feel this is really coming out of his soul. And love for Japanese vegetables. So yeah, we got lucky to have Ken today. So if you have any questions or comments about the show or suggestions for show topics or guests, please contact us at japanneeds@heritageradionetwork.org or kikukatayama.com. Japan Needs is a weekly program and always available at heritageradionetwork.org as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify as a podcast. Our engineer is Armin Spenjan, and thank you for listening. I will see you next week.
Japan Eats is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a non-profit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thank you for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode. Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.